What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower. Now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Part-Time Genius, a production of iHeartRadio.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
All right, so I was looking up old video games and video game systems this week, as we've talked about. I know both of our boys are obsessed with video games these days, and William is trying to find every game ever made on every system ever made, and they, of course, make these like little computers where you can go back and try these games from pretty much every system, so it is kind of fun to get into it with him, but there's one that he's not familiar with. So I don't know if you know this, but before they were making graphing calculators, Texas Instruments used to make a computer for kids. It was actually called the TI-99.
So weirdly, I actually know this because I had one.
No way.
My dad was super into gadgets and early computers. And so I had one in my room when I was like four, which is crazy.
That's wild.
But you know, the weirdest thing about the system is that like the TI definitely had a place for cartridges, but it could also hook up to a cassette player and it would play games through like tape cassettes, essentially. So like the cassettes would feed data into the computer, which is nuts. And I actually like thought about this like a few years ago and had to look it up because it felt like a dream. Like it didn't feel real. But the weird thing about my TI-99 was I had none of the fun games. Like everything my parents bought for me was educational. So I think like the most fun game I had was chess, which is
well, it's a little bit of a relief because I thought I was going to tell you everything I knew here and you're going to be like, sorry, I already knew that. But so there's a TI-99 game that's definitely not educational. It's called Garbage Belly. And it's why I brought the system up in the first place. I was reading about it in PC Mag, and this is what the back of the Garbage Belly box said. It says, "Help Garbage Belly gobble up the ripe garbage in a field of garbage pails, but watch out. If you make him eat raw garbage, he will die."
Garbage Belly. I feel like I've never heard anyone say the word garbage so much to like sell a product, but isn't it weird that the character dies from raw garbage? Like he only feasts on the finest garbage, which is cooked garbage?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to die from something. Plus, you know, just because his name is Garbage Belly, I don't think we can assume like that he wouldn't have discerning taste. Like some garbage does have to taste better than other garbage.
That is a good point. So was this game any good?
No, it was a terrible game. I mean, you're lucky your parents brought you the educational games only. But Garbage Belly is just the first of nine ridiculous video games that we're going to talk about today. So blow the dust off that old cartridge, enter the up, down code, and let's hit start. Hey there, podcast listeners. Welcome to Part-Time Genius. I'm Will Pearson, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend Mangesh Hatticketer. And on the other side of the computer screen, cleaning house in a ferocious game of Pac-Man. That's our friend and producer, Lowell. He is actually, guys, he's sharing a screen right now. And I wish our listeners could see this because he is tearing through those ghosts just one after another. It's a total bloodbath. Yeah, it's really impressive.
It actually reminds me of that scene from 30 Rock, just saying the word Pac-Man, like when someone tells Tracy Morgan that that the guy who created Pac-Man just passed away, and he says to put out a bowl of cherries and some ghost meat in his honor, which
seems like a pretty,
so funny.
Pretty fitting tribute there. But unfortunately, Pac-Man is way too mainstream for today's show because we are on the hunt for some deeper, weirder cuts. And to help us find them, we brought along our good pal, Gabe. Gabe, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me back, guys.
Yeah, of course. So I am curious, like I haven't played games in forever, and I think Will is the same, although both our sons are obsessed. But Gabe, you play video games, right? Like, have you spent all your summer playing Animal Crossing like everyone else?
No, I have not. I'm the one person who hasn't, I guess. But I did play a different kind of simulator game this summer. It's called Untitled Goose Game. Have you guys heard of this?
I have seen my son play it. Yes, actually.
Yes, right? It's awesome. It's basically a goose simulator. And yeah, you play as a goose wandering around this little English village. And all you can do is honk, flap, grab things with your beak, run, you know, typical goose stuff. And so the goal is really to just annoy the townspeople and cause as much mischief as possible. It's kind of amazing. And if you've ever wondered what it's like to be a goose, this is probably as close to the real thing as you're ever going to get. Don't wait.
I'm sold. I feel like this is a reason to play video games again. But totally. What I really like about that is like the concept kind of feels like a throwback to the early days of video games when there just weren't as many expectations and you could get away with making a game just about anything. So like, you know, my first pick for today is actually a great example of that. It was released for the Atari 2600 back in 1982, and it's called Sneak and Peek. And it was basically Hide and Seek, the video game.
So why didn't they just call it Hide and Seek?
I know. I mean, Sneak and Peek sounds like so dirty if I compare it.
Yeah,
but,
it does.
But, I mean, branding is just one of the game's many problems. You know, it's a two-player game. One player just has to look away from the screen while the other player hides. And then the player who's hiding doesn't do anything at all while the other person looks for them on the screen. They just like stay put and hope time runs out before the other person finds them. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Wait, so this was a game that required one player to not look at the screen at all and another player to not touch the controller. I mean, are we even sure this qualifies as a video game? Like, what are you doing?
It's kind of like, I don't know if Will remembers this, but when we were like trying to brainstorm board games, we came up with this idea for Tag the Board Game, mm-hmm. where the only thing inside the like the box is a cone for base and maybe like a pin that says it, you know, like I feel like this is almost as bad. But, you know, the worst part of the game was there weren't that many hiding spots in the game. The game's set in a house, but you can only go to three rooms plus the yard. So finding the hider isn't that much of a challenge. And you'd actually be better off just going outside and playing a real game of hide and go seek.
Okay, so Sneak and Peek sounds like a pretty weak substitute for the real thing. But my first pick for today offers a gaming experience you'd be hard-pressed to find in real life. And in fact, I do not recommend trying. The game's infamous now. It's called Takeshi's Challenge, and it was only released in Japan back in 1986. The title refers to a real-life comedian and actor named Takeshi Kitano, and he was a pretty big star in Japan at the time, from what I understand.
Yeah, he's actually he was a director, too, and he directed this movie Sonatine and Fireworks. They're really beautiful but like violent films.
Oh, awesome. Well, according to legend, the video game company behind Space Invaders, they wanted to meet with Takeshi, and so he agreed, and they got together in a bar to see if he'd be willing to make a game with them. And Takeshi wasn't all that interested. He didn't even like video games, but the company was picking up the tab that night, so he stuck around. And over the course of a few hours, Takeshi drank a ton of rice wine, and he gave the designers his stream of consciousness ideas for a video game. And then, with notes in hand, the designer set to work creating what would become one of the most bizarre adventure games ever made.
It's going to have to be pretty strange to top a goose simulator, because that sounded pretty random, if you ask me.
Yeah. Well, trust me, this was way weirder. The main character was an ordinary businessman. And while the game didn't spell it out for you, the ultimate goal is to make it to a distant island where a cave of treasure awaits you. And the only way to get there is basically to have the most extreme midlife crisis possible. So get this, you have to quit your job, divorce your wife, get drunk, fight the Yakuza, sing karaoke, mm-hmm. learn to hang glide, travel to the South Pacific, and of course, blow up some alien spaceships.
Sounds about right.
And because this was all dreamt up by a guy who disliked video games, the tasks themselves were not designed to be enjoyable. So, for instance, to beat the karaoke section, you have to actually sing into the console's built-in microphone. And then your performance, it has to be judged as good by the computer. And here's the thing, there's no criteria for the performance. So if the game says your singing is lousy, then you just have to do it again until you get it right.
Oh, wow.
And if that wasn't infuriating enough, once you actually beat the challenge, the reward is a treasure map, but it's written in invisible ink. So the player has to sit there without touching the controller for an entire hour while you wait for the map to appear. And if you touch a button any sooner than that, you're thrown right back to the karaoke challenge. It's sadistic.
It sounds like such a like big practical joke. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Right. Yeah. Some people think that, you know, the whole thing was just Takeshi kind of thumbing his nose at people who play video games. And the game's ending actually lends some credence to that. You know, spoilers. But if you manage to stick with it through all the frustration, the only reward is a little drawing of Takeshi's smiling face and a message that says, "Why are you taking this game so seriously?"
All right. Well, if you're in the market for something a little more relaxing and honestly a bit less soul crushing, I have a recommendation for you. It's a little puzzle game, and it's called Hattress. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, this is just Tetris, but with hats. But no, my friends, this is Tetris with hats and the severed heads of Frankenstein and Abraham Lincoln himself.
So was this game also designed by a drunk Japanese comedian?
No, this is actually from the creator of the original Tetris. So this was back in 1990. Yeah, this is true. He went back to the drawing board and perfected his original idea by swapping different shaped blocks for different kinds of hats. So the hats would descend the screen two at a time, and the goal was to place them on one of six heads lined up at the bottom. So stack five of the same hat on top of one head and they would disappear just like those lines in Tetris.
So I guess that kind of makes sense. Like, how does the head of Abe Lincoln fit into this, though?
Yeah, that's the part I'm not quite so sure about. I mean, I guess they wanted some recognizable heads to stack hats on. And of course, Lincoln fit the bill. We always think of him with a hat on. But, you know, the better you do, the more new heads you unlock. And so in addition to Lincoln and Frankenstein, there's also, of course, Charlie Chaplin and Dracula.
Dracula,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, the usual crew.
I like that they pick notable hat wearers like Lincoln and Chaplin, mm-hmm. but then they just threw in a couple monsters.
Yeah,
you know?
That makes sense.
If there's one thing Dracula's known for, yeah, it's his iconic hat.
I mean, the whole concept's a little confusing to me, but what type of hats are we talking about? Like baseball caps, berets? Like what is in the mix?
Well, there's Lincoln's stovepipe and, of course, Chaplin's famous bowler.
Mm-hmm, which makes sense.
But you're right. There is a baseball cap along with a cowboy hat. Let's see what else. A top hat and one of those pointy cone hats that like wizards wear. And so it's a pretty good mix. But the game never actually explains where this endless stream of hats is coming from, or, of course, the severed heads for that matter.
Which I guess is why you've got to have a sequel to this.
Right.
But speaking of sequels, my next pick is kind of a spiritual sequel to that game Gabe talked about forever ago about David and Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it in our Philistines episode, and I've kind of been obsessed with it ever since. It was Bible Adventures, right, Gabe? That's what it's called.
Oh, that's the one.
Yeah. So I was fascinated by it. So I looked into other biblical games, and a few years after that came out, the same developers released another Bible-based game called Super 3D Noah's Ark. Wow. And, this one was actually for the Super Nintendo, and it was built using the same game engine as the first-person shooter game, Wolfenstein 3D.
Wait, you said first-person shooter? Like, was this actually a shooting game? Like, is Noah running around through the arc, like, gunning down animals or something?
Yeah, pretty much, except obviously they didn't have guns back then, so instead, Noah's got this trusty slingshot and an endless supply of fruit.
No way.
The game's storyline is that the animals are sick and tired of being cooped up in a crowded boat. I guess it kind of feels like quarantine. Mm-hmm. And eventually all the animals go rogue, so Noah has to protect his family by launching fruit at the animals until they all get full enough to slip into a food coma.
So, I mean, I think it's safe to say the designers took a few liberties there. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was just my translation, but I don't remember an animal rampage and a shooting spree being part of the original story.
You got to read it again, Gabe. I think you forgot that part.
Yeah.
Add some punch.
But when I looked it up, it feels like the Bible doesn't say anything about what actually went down on the ark. Like, it covers what happened before, and it covers what happens after the Ark's voyage, but, you know, maybe this is exactly what happened.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you never know, but I feel like we need to take a quick break so we can all look this up. This game just seems too weird to be true, but we do have four more weird games to talk about, so we'll be right back.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Welcome back to Part-Time Genius, where we're talking about some of the strangest video games you've probably never played before. I think it is your turn next, Gabe, so what's your second pick?
Okay, so if you thought Noah's Ark was a strange idea for a game, then brace yourself for 1994's Rex Ronan, Experimental Surgeon. Off to a great start, right? So this was a Super Nintendo game as well, and weirdly enough, it was designed as an educational game, or... you know, at least in theory, the game was meant to teach kids about the real world danger of smoking And to help deliver this message, the developers came up with a pretty out there storyline. Mm-hmm. So here's the pitch. A wealthy tobacco salesman is dying, and it's up to you, Rex Ronan, to save his life through the miracle of experimental surgery. So by shrinking yourself to microscopic size, you're able to enter the salesman's body and blast away his sickness with a high-powered laser.
Wow, like I love the detail here. So you basically shrink yourself down, and then you, what do? You like clean out the guy's lungs or something?
Yeah, and not just his lungs either. Like another level has you blasting fatty deposits in his heart. And there's even a part where you have to enter the guy's brain to, quote, remove the nicotine addiction. That's how this works, right?
That's exciting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the weirdest part, you know, which is saying something, is that the game has a side story where the tobacco company finds out about your plan. And then in order to keep the salesman from talking bad about the company, they send a bunch of tiny evil robots into his body to kind of finish him off. So not only are you fighting disease, you've also got hordes of tiny robots to contend with.
I feel like that's what experimental surgery is, right? Like it's they teach in med school. It's so good.
Yeah, that does sound pretty wild. But I feel like it does kind of work. Like, I don't think I feel like smoking after that. But all right, well, from the exhilarating world of experimental surgery, let's go to my next game. This is the equally riveting Sensible Train Spotting. That's actually the name, Sensible Train Spotting, and it was released for Amiga computers in 1995, and it delivered exactly what it promised, a detailed simulation of what it's like to be a man with a thermos sitting on a bench and marking down the engine numbers of trains that pass him by. Doesn't this sound exciting?
Wait, is that's what train spotting is? Like, I've heard the term before, but I honestly never knew what it meant.
I'm actually more interested in the fact that there were Amiga computers in 1995.
Yeah.
But I guess you can tackle Gabe's question first.
Yeah, I'll tackle that one first. Then we'll talk about my Tandy from back in the early 90s. But yeah, so train spotting is a real hobby for some people. So what you do is you go to the different stations and you write down the numbers on the trains as they pass by. And so people would create lists of all different engines that operated in a city, and then you try to see them all in person. It was big in the UK during the mid-20th century, and some devoted fans have carried on the tradition ever since then.
I mean, it reminds me like of those families who used to drive out to airports to see planes take off, mm-hmm. like back in the glamorous era of like air flight or air travel.
Yeah, and you know, and train spotting is still a thing, but sometimes you just can't make it down to the rail yard, you know? So for days like that, there's this game, Sensible Train Spotting, all of the fun of watching trains and marking off numbers from the comfort of your own living room.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's more surprising to me, really, like that this is an activity people actually enjoy or that someone made a video game about it. Like, both are kind of baffling to me, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an action-packed hobby, and that's true of the game, too, but there's still some challenge to it. Like, for example, the longer you play, the faster the trains move and the more there are on the screen. So it does make it tougher to cross off all the numbers on your list before the time runs out. And so weirdly, the game is actually hyper aware of the fact that train spotting is super dull. And so if you run out of time before you clear a train spotting card, a message pops up that says, "Time's up, sad man, go back one card." Which, you know, of course, is pretty depressing, but it's somehow less depressing than the message you get for winning. That one just says, "Well done, my sad friend. On to the next card."
I love that it knows what a sad man you are either way.
So
it's really what you want from game.
Yeah, it's kind of like Takeshi's Challenge, really. Like, it mocks you just for wanting to play it.
Yeah.
Well, it is funny because the last game on my list also mocks you for just playing it. And this one was released in 1999 for the Sega Dreamcast. It's about raising a digital pet, and it's called Seaman.
Okay, and what kind of pet are you raising?
So in this game, Seaman, you're basically the caretaker of a bizarre fish-human hybrid. He basically looks like this bass with a human face slapped on the front. And the object of the game is to raise this creature through like all of its upsetting developmental phases and until he eventually grows legs and leaves the water to start a life of his own. But the game does not make this easy. For one thing, the only way you can interact with Seaman is by giving him voice commands. And because the voice detection was pretty spotty, it was hard to get him to do what you want. The other downside to the game is that Seaman is kind of a jerk. Like, you're supposed to form a bond with him by talking to him more and more, but most of the time he just insults you, so you're never really rooting for him to make it to adulthood.
Oh, wow. So what we have here is basically a bad parent simulator where you neglectfully look after a fish monster. Does that sound about right?
I mean, it's basically my experience of parenting. Like,
that sounds familiar.
Except I forgot to mention that Leonard Nimoy also chimes in sometimes to give advice and cheer you on. That's the best part.
Wow, I feel like actually this is getting better.
Okay, so we've talked about a lot of weird games today, most of which probably don't qualify as good games, but the last one I want to talk about fits perfectly in both categories. It is a decidedly weird game, but it's also a good one. It's called Katamari Damashi, which roughly means soul clump in Japanese. This game came out in 2004 on the PlayStation 2, and it's one of the most joyously wacky games I've ever seen. The backstory is that the magnificent king of all cosmos goes on a bender one night, drunk on the beauty of creation, and during his revelry, he accidentally destroys every star in the night sky.
Oh, man.
As you do.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that's where the player comes in. So as the son of the king, the prince of all cosmos, it's your job to roll a big sticky ball called a katamari all over the world until enough stuff sticks to it that your dad can then launch the whole thing into space and turn it into a brand new star. So, one by one, you're gradually rebuilding all the constellations using, giant balls of junk.
Which, kind of sounds like a sweet concept. I vaguely remember this game being sort of a phenomena, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what kind of stuff are you rolling up?
Yeah, I mean, anything you can, really. Like, each level gives you a certain size that you have to, grow your katamari to before the time runs out. So you start small, you're making a 10-centimeter ball with little stuff like erasers and paper clips. But the more stuff you roll over, the larger the ball grows. So gradually you're able to pick up bigger and bigger stuff, books, bowls, furniture, house pets, motorcycles, city buses, like you name it. In the later stages, you roll a katamari so big that it starts ripping up buildings and bridges and then eventually natural phenomena, too. Like, you're literally ripping clouds and rainbows out of the sky.
That's like, amazing.
Nothing goes to waste.
Yeah. I do like that you repair damaged stars by pretty much wrecking the Earth and then chucking it all into space.
Yeah, that's about it. And the best part, though, is it's got an amazing soundtrack. So the whole time you're rolling up the world, there's this super upbeat Japanese pop music playing. Hmm. And just what you want for that kind of mass destruction. By the way, Katamari was actually, it was published by Namco, which is the same developer behind Pac-Man, another game where you play as a big circle and gobble up everything in sight. So, yeah, I guess they really know their brand.
As strange as that all sounds, I do think Will should take home today's trophy. One, because Sensible Train Spotting is a game I would never force on anyone, but I would love to have that like framed on my wall. And and two, because he used the word Amiga computers, which I haven't heard in forever.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I mean, really, all of Will's picks were about like mundane things like train spotting and stacking hats
and garbage eating.
Yes.
Garbage eating. Yeah, very boring.
Don't forget the
it
garbage
went all
eating.
In on boring.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I can't forget that. Well, it really paid off for
it. Well, thank you guys. It is an honor. And thanks as always to our listeners for tuning in. That wraps it up for today's Part-Time Genius. For Mango, Gabe, Lowell, and myself, thanks so much for listening. Please stay safe and we'll be back soon with another episode.
Part-Time Genius is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.